Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Moed Katan is daf Chav Ches. We are in Chav Zayin. We are 2 days away from finishing the Masechta. Tomorrow we finish the Masechta. That means Wednesday we start Masechta Chagiga. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf Taf. We are back on Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, and the question we left ourselves off with yesterday is, what is a dargash? Why are we even asking that question? So you remember yesterday we had a discussion of Kfiyas Amita. One of the Nihugim of Avelis, one of the practices of Avelis is to take the bed and turn the bed over, a practice that we don't do nowadays, but the Gemara dedicates a number of lines, pages of the Daf, to this topic of Kfiyas Amita. And this topic of discussion of Kfiyas Amita is now specifically which beds. Now there is a brisa that we saw yesterday that says that every bed in the house, meaning all beds are to be flipped over. There was a discussion about Shabbos. Shabbos, you have to take the beds and put it back upright. On Shabbos, you can't have Avelis Shebefarhesi. You can't do public signs of Avelis on Shabbos, so therefore you have to turn them upright. But after Shabbos, you turn it back upside down. Even if you're getting up Sunday morning from Avelis, you still have to turn it upside down for Motzei Shabbos until Sunday morning. But either way, though, there's a mitzvah of Kfiyas Amita for the Avel. It's part of the Nihugi of Avelis. So the Bryce said yesterday that you have to take every bed and flip it upside down. If you take a look at the towards the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, we did this already, but just let's start from this point in time because it really sets us up for the question of Dargish. So we are the first, the last narrow line, Tana Rabbanan. Kofi mitasa lo mitasa bavaru kofa. You don't just turn over, turn your bed. Allah kol mitasa yesh lo b'soch beso. You turn over every bed. Kofa, 10 beds in 10 different locations in the house, it doesn't matter, you turn every one of them over. Whether there are 5 brothers, one of them died, every one of the brothers has an obligation to turn the bed over. However, if the bed was not established for sleeping, you used it as a drawer, as an armoire, it wasn't for sleeping, that does not need to be turned over. And then finally, Dargish ain't Sarach Likfoso Ela Zokfo. And the famous Dargish bed, which I told you we're going to make it famous today, the famous Dargish bed, so you don't have to turn that bed over, but Zokif would just simply put it upright, put it vertical. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer Dargish Matios Karvita, Vuhuna Fameyelab. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, that's not necessary, you just simply untie it, and the bed falls on its own, and that's all you need to do. All right, Shitas Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which we're going to come back to later on. So the question of the day, not really a question of yesterday, but okay, the question is, my dargish. So what does the Braisa mean when it says the dargish does not need to be overturned. According to the Tana Kama, it just simply needs to be put upright, vertically. And according to Rosh Hashanah and Gamaliel, it just simply needs to be untied. But the first things first, what are we talking about? So Amar Ula Arsa Degada. So Ula says that the dargish is the Arsa Degada. Please take a look at Rashi. Well, Rashi writes over here, what does Arsa Degada mean? So Rashi says, Mita Shemiyachtim Osa LaMazel Tov. A Mazel Tov bed. Right? Literally, a good luck bed, says Rashi. Meaning that you have a number of beds in your house, you have beds that you sleep on, beds that maybe represent a chest, an armoire, some sort of shelving. And then, of course, you have your good luck bed. Right? Who doesn't have a good luck bed in their house? So, actually, I don't, but I've sent some boys away to yeshiva, so we do have some empty beds. Yeah, correct. Anyone wants to know. But what does that mean? So Rashi says, "Ve'im shamshim baklom." It's not used at all. Ela miachna sa lishros mazel tov alaha. But you just simply have a bed in the house, and it serves there as no other purpose as to provide good mazel, good luck for you and your family. Okay, interesting, Rashi. Correct? Meaning Rashi over here is describing that there's a bed in the house designated for nothing more than just providing good luck. I mean, first things first, do we believe in it? So I'd like to say yes, because Rashi said it, and I'd like to be in line with Rashi, but the other Rishonim are troubled by this pshat in Rashi, where Rashi over here is describing this phenomenon of having a good luck bed in your house, right? Something in your house that's basically a good luck charm. Right, we're not normally people who are into charms. Take a look at the Ran and Sanhedrin. The Ran and Sanhedrin, right? The same Gemara is repeated in Sanhedrin. Right, you can see it on the side. So you take a look at the Ran and Sanhedrin. So he takes great exception to this Rashi, and right far from it to have any type of good luck charm in the house. We charms in general, so we don't have. But meanwhile, I mean, Rashi's right here on the daf, and Rashi says it very clearly. So it's safe to say that Rashi is of the position that there is some idea of having a good luck sign. Okay, it is definitely worth more discussion. In the meantime, however, we're going to go on in the Gemara. So the Dargish does need to be turned over. So again, so if I put the controversial Rashi aside for just a moment, the basic point is, it's not a bed for sleeping. People don't sleep on it. It's the bed that's just lying around the house. That doesn't need to be overturned. That's the Dargish. So, Amalei Rabbah, Elamiatik Abimach, the non Kalam, Mesubim Alarj, Vahu Mesiv Al Dargish. So the Gemara says, well, it doesn't seem like you're right, because we have a Brisa. The Brisa says that when the king's in mourning, so everyone sits on the floor, but the king himself, he's a king. So he sits on the dargash. He doesn't sit on the floor. Okay, as a king. Even the king doesn't sit on the floor. So the Gemara says, Miki mi da'adi'ina lo asibna v'ashra masvina lay. So the Gemara says, now just from a logic standpoint, doesn't that make sense? We haven't been using this bed at all, and then the king needs something to sit on, and now he's going to sit on it? So maska v'ravashi, my kusha. So Rashi says, I don't know if that's such a strong question. Rav Ashi says, unusual behavior for an avon? That's fine. That's totally acceptable. Look, normally you don't feed people, right? And meanwhile, when someone's an avon, what do? You feed them, right? The student's avon. So here, you're right. Normally you don't sit on the dargish bed, but what do you do when you're an avon? You sit in the dargish bed. So I don't think that's such a strong question, says Rav Ashi. Ela ikasha akasha. The Gemara says, I'll quote another brisa. Dargish and tzarech lefoso lezokfo. So the brisa says that when it comes to the dargish, you don't have to turn it over, but you do have to put it upright. Take the bed and move it vertically. So vi arsa degada amayin tzarech lefoso. Hatanya. The Gemara says, now if we're talking about the good luck bed, so consider the following brisa. Hakofe mitaso lo mitaso bavad hu kofe elo kol mitoshi yesh lo betoch beso kofe. You have to turn over every bed over. So if we're talking about, if this dargash that you're talking about is basically a bed, turn it over. So the Gemara says, my kushya. So the Gemara says, again, that's also not a strong question. You don't have to turn over every bed. The Brisa said very clearly, and nobody argued, that if the bed was used as just simply to hold your kalim, to hold your utensils, to hold your clothing, that bed doesn't need to be turned over. So the dargish doesn't need to be turned over. So again, not a compelling question. Eli kasha akasha. So that was now strike two. Now we are getting ready for strike number three. Meaning right now, this definition of dargish is that it's a good luck bed. And the Gemara is bothered by that, but right now, the two challenges that the Gemara posed, the Gemara had no problem with those challenges. The Gemara was easily dismissed those challenges. Challenge number three. Rishim Gamlil Omer Dargish Matir Kavatavi Hinofa Me'alav. So according to Rishim Gamlil, you don't have to take the Dargish bed and move it upright and move it vertically. You just simply untie it, and that's all you need to do. So the now, if we're talking about if the Dargish is the good luck bed, like we've been suggesting, so what are you untying? What does that mean? So the Gemara is going to give an explanation. He quotes a rabbi. His rabbi's name was Rav Tachlifa. In the marketplace. My dargish arsa detzala. So the dargish is arsa detzala. It is a bed, and it's made out of leather, meaning that the mattress itself is made out of leather. Right, we went over this a number of times already. Mattresses in the good old days. Not a box spring, not springs. But a mattress was just simply ropes. You had four posts. And what you do is you would weave, right, like a loom, you would weave strings back and forth, and then you would lie on top of the strings. That was a bed in the good old days. Kind of makes you not miss those good old days. So there were beds back then that weren't made out of strings, but were actually had a leather patch. In other words, in the place of strings, there was a leather patch, and there were leather straps at the end of the leather patch on all sides, and those leather strings were tied to the posts of the bed. And not tied over the posts, but through the posts. Okay, so it was a different type of bed. It's what the Gemara here refers to as arsa detzala. Okay, so we're giving now, not so much a new definition of what a dargish is, but just in terms of its construction, its composition. Okay, so it was instead of strings being tied across, it was a leather patch, and the ends of the leather were tied through the posts. So the Gemara says it in Menam. The Gemara says, look, we have this as well. I'm Rav Yirmiyah Dargash Seirugo Mitocho Mita Seiruga Al Gaba. When it comes to the Dargash, so the tying was done through the post. When it comes to a Mita, the tying is done over the post. Either way, okay, good. So the Dargash is basically another type of bed, but with a leather mattress. So I'm Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha, I'm Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi, Allah Gav Shem Gamliel. Okay? And on the Dargash, how does the Ava conduct himself with the Dargash? Like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which is, you don't have to take the bed and move it vertically from a horizontal position to a vertical position, but rather all you need to do is just simply untie the leather mattress, let it fall to the ground. That's all you need to do. It my name the Gemara quotes another Braisa, or another, I should say, another Memra. Am Rabbi Yaakov Baruch, Am Rabbi Asi Mita, Shenaklita Yotzin, Zokfa Vidya. If you have a bed where you have the naklitin, are the posts, right? Kind of like a canopy bed. You take a look at Rashi for a description over here. Eitzim yotzim mistukanim lemerasho sav lemeragol sav nosin eitz aruch aleim nosin asadinim aleim lishmor meazvuvim. It was a kind of mesh that protected you from bugs. It looked a little more like a teepee than an actual canopy bed. Instead of four posts in the four corners, it was rather two posts where basically then some sort of screen was placed over, kind of like a teepee, a V-shape, an inverted V. And you remember the word naklitin? We had this word back in sukkah when describing putting up a canopy bed inside your sukkah. Four posts, right? The Mishnah back there, and I'm reminding myself. Four posts back then was no good because that's sukkah tachas sukkah, but two posts, that was fine. The Mishnah said was fine. So over here, so mita shenaklita yotzin zokfavidiyo. So you just simply need to put it upright, meaning take it and move it vertically, and that would be sufficient. Tanurabban, in other words, I guess that bed would be almost impossible, near impossible, to flip it over totally. So just simply move it into a vertical position. Tanurabban yashe agabe kisa agabe udya gadola agabe karka la yasi de chavasa. And then the Braisa says, don't sit on a chair, don't sit on a type of bench. Don't sit on the floor. But rather, you have to sit on the overturned bed. So in other words, part of the purpose of overturning the bed is so that you have a low chair, if you will, to sit on. So and that's where you have to sit. I'm Rav Yochanan Shalokiyim Kviyas Amita. And Rav Yochanan says, you haven't fulfilled your obligation because you haven't done the mitzvah of Kviyas Amita. Tanu Rabbanan. Mechabdin. Omar Bitzin Bebeis Ha'avon. Madichin Karos V'kosos V'tzluchis V'kitonios Bebeis Ha'avon. Upkeep of the house. You're a mourner. You're sitting in the house and you're mourning. That doesn't mean that your house has to be in shambles. You can have somebody sweep the house. Right? You have two terms that describe sweeping. You have mechabdim and marbitzim. Mechabed means to sweep with a broom. Marbitz, back in those days, they did not have tile flooring. They had just a regular dirt floor, earth floor. And so they would sprinkle water on the ground and that would keep all the dirt and dust down and it wouldn't come up. But basically, it's a way of keeping the floors clean. So you could do that in the Beis Avel. You could wash the dishes in the Beis Avel. Ein mivin es a mugmar v'es a besamim le-Beis Avel. But you cannot bring mugmar. You can't bring incense. So in other words, basically, general upkeep of the house is fine. Anything that goes above and beyond what's considered normal upkeep, that's not good. So to make to burn incense in the house, that you cannot do. You remember back in Beitza we had this discussion. Can you burn incense on Yontif? And what was our answer? What was the Gemara's answer to that? You can't. Even though you're allowed to make a fire on Yontif, and you're allowed to cook on Yontif, and and you could do other burning activities on Yontif, right? We talked back then about smoking cigarettes and cigars, which we said don't, but in terms of on Yontif, so the earlier poskim were totally okay with it because who doesn't enjoy it? Okay, that was the earlier poskim. Okay, later poskim have changed their tune a little bit on this matter. But fine. But here we're talking about burning incense, and back in Beitza we said no, you can't burn incense because this is not enjoyed by everybody. It's not davar shav l'chol nefesh. So here as well in the Beis Avel. So regular maintenance of sweeping the floor and doing the dishes, that's fine. But the burning of the incense, that's not quote unquote regular maintenance. That's above and beyond. Only some people enjoy it, so you can't do it in the Beis Avel. So Ini, the Gemara says, is this really so? V'atni bar kapara ein mevachan al mugmar v'ol al besamim Beis Avel. So bar kapara makes a statement, which is you can't make a bracha on mugmar. Now you can't make a bracha on mugmar. What's the clear indication? It's only the bracha which becomes the issue. But to bring it in to begin with is that's fine. And the Gemara makes exactly that diuk. Sounds like it's no problem. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, not a difficulty. In the Beis Avel itself, you cannot bring in mugmar, you cannot bring in incense. It's too, I guess the word I'm going to say is fancy. It's just not appropriate for the Beis Avel to start bringing in incense and burn incense, and it's too much of a it's too fancy, it's too delightful. It's not something which is appropriately done in the Beis Avel. In the Beis HaMenachmim, the comforters portion of the house, so their incense can be burned. That's not going to be a problem, and that's what the Bryce was describing. But since it is somehow connected to the Beis Avel, so they should make a bracha over it. Okay. The continuing in the Mishnah. Okay. We're up to Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. We're at the Mishnah towards the bottom of the Amud, and we're going to be now discussing the Sudas Havra. Okay. We have already explained this before, but this is, I think, the first time that we're seeing this in a Mishnah, where the Mishnah is going to be describing the Sudas Havra. When the mourners come home from the cemetery, from the funeral, so they are going to receive a meal. They are not going to be the providers of the meal. In fact, the halacha demands that others provide for them the meal. This is Sudas Havra. I know in certain communities, the minhag is to provide meals for the mourners all 7 days. Okay, various minhagim. But the first meal that they eat when they come home, so there's an obligation that it's provided by others. The word Havra, hey, beis reish, hey, comes from the word bari. It's going to sustain them. It's going to revive them. It'll help mitigate some of the sadness and some of the sorrow. Obviously, it won't. Obviously, they're still in the raw state of mourning and avelus, but it does help. And this is what's referred to as the Sudas Havra. Where do we see this in Tanakh? That question is going to be answered later this morning, where the Gemara is going to quote a pasuk that speaks about the Sudas Havra, right, makes an inference about it. But that we're going to get to later. In the meantime, however, we're at the Mishnah, and you know how the Mishnah works. The Mishnah is going to give us detailed halachas about the Sudas Havra. So, I am a look on the base of Avalo Batavo, Avalo Askutla, Avalo Bekanon, Elo Besalim. Delivery of the Sudas Havra should be done in simple baskets. I don't know what all these terms are, but they're basically fancier trays, right? A tavla is a table, askutla, kanon. We've certainly seen those words in other Mishnayos, right? Kanon is usually a reference to some sort of plate where they did sifting and sorting, right? You remember the Gemara back in Shabbos where we discussed the kanon. But anyway, the basic idea is don't deliver it in fancy trays. Deliver the food in a simple basket. Now, if it's Chol HaMoed, now we know no one's observing Avelos during Chol HaMoed, but still, the burial, they come home from the burial, they're very sad. So, in benching, you don't include the special benching for an Avel during Chol HaMoed. Okay, there is a special benching that's done in the base Avel. If you want to see the nusach of that, so we're going to go back to the 7th parak of Brachos, where there the Gemara gives us the actual nusach of what should be said and in benching in the base Avel, and it substitutes, if I remember correctly, the 3rd bracha of benching. Okay, the 3rd bracha of benching is going to be a special benching, a special bracha for an Avel. It's already been noted by many, many of the Achronim that for reasons that are kind of inexplicable, so in a base Avel, this bracha and benching is not said. Okay, why it's not said? Unclear, totally unclear. It's unusual. Meaning this bracha is actually found in the Gemara. The nusach is found in the Gemara, and we don't do it anymore. And kind of no. I personally don't have a good explanation why. I'm sure an attempt has been made to explain why we don't do it anymore. So Ava Omdim Bishura Menachmen Upochin Asarabim and Chol HaMoed. So here is acceptable behavior for after the cemetery and after the funeral. So Omdim Bishura, stand in a row, right, after the actual burial, so two rows are formed, and the Avelim walk through the rows, and they receive nichum, and they receive comfort. And that behavior is totally appropriate, even if it's Chol HaMoed. And Uposhin es HaRabim. But then afterwards, we basically tell the public, okay, scatter. Meaning that it's Chol HaMoed, it's Yimei Simcha. We're certainly going to extend some words of comfort for the Aval, but now at this point in time, everybody scatter. Let's not linger in the street and continue with the with the public demonstration of mourning. Also, I know we're kind of working backwards over here, but now we're talking about marching the coffin over to the cemetery. The minute back then, we kind of do it this nowadays, not exactly the way it's been, I'm going about to describe it, is that they would march the coffin over to the graveside, and they would stop along the way, and with each stop, so words of eulogy were said. Right, that's how it was done back then. Nowadays, slightly modified. Right? So some people do the eulogies at the graveside. Some people do it in some chapel, and then walk the coffin over. Okay, but back then it was at the stops, meaning they would stop as they were marching the coffin to the cemetery, and then they would give hespedim on Chol HaMoed. No stops, meaning on Chol HaMoed we don't want hespedim on Chol HaMoed, so therefore we don't stop on Chol HaMoed, because stopping would be a sign that we should start eulogizing. So, and we don't want the, in other words, aren't eulogies on Chol HaMoed. V'lo shal nashim la'olam in ne'a kavod. Now women, women we're not going to stop at all. Meaning for the burial of women, so the women are going to be transported immediately to the cemetery for reasons which we're going to explain later on in the Gemara. Tana Rabban in the Gemara quotes a b'raisa. V'rishona ayim alechim beveis aval ashirim beklasu shal kesef shal zav v'anil misalei nitzarim shal arava klufa. The very interesting Gemara is coming up right now. For the next about 15 lines of Gemara, we're going to be discussing how institutions were made so that the poor would not feel bad. So example number one, I think there are going to be about half a dozen examples being given. Example number one, we're talking about the delivery of food to the Beis Aval. So originally in the delivery of the food for the Beis Aval, so the wealthy would receive the food in gold and in silver plates and platters. And the poor people would receive their food in wicker baskets. And the poor people, it was just a public demonstration, meaning the poor obviously know they're poor, but it was just a public demonstration of, look, they live very well and we don't. So hitkin by yuaniyam adbaishim, sorry, and the poor people were very embarrassed. So hitkinish yu akol mivim besalin and sarim shal arava klufa mimnei kvodam shal aniyam. So an institution was made from that point going forward, which is that whenever you deliver the food to the Beis Aval, it has to be done in baskets, so as not to make the poor people feel bad. Okay, so that was institution number one.
Is it the same type of food no matter what?
Type of food, unclear. Right now we're just talking about method of delivery. Okay, I don't know. Tanur Rabbanan. Okay, so that was example number one. So this is now number two. In terms of drinking, so in the wealthy and the house of the wealthy, so they would give to drink in clear glass, and the poor people it was a color glass. I don't know why the clear glass cost more, but it obviously did. And once again, vayuanim is baishim, and the poor people were embarrassed because, again, on their own, obviously, in other words, they can afford whatever they can afford, but other people providing for them. Oh, you're wealthy, we're going to provide for you good. Oh, you're poor, we're going to provide for you what, you know, because you're poor. So, and they felt terrible. So, once again, a uniformity was created for everybody. Everybody's going to be drinking out of the colored glasses, which are the poor man's glasses. And so, again, to create a scenario in which the poor are not going to feel bad. Number three. A minog which to us seems unbelievably strange, but that's because we don't do it. That's why it seems strange. And that is that for the wealthy, they would leave the coffin uncovered and the face of the mace uncovered, and for the poor people, they would cover it. Rashi points out over here, you could see Rashi inside, I'm just going to say it outside. The faces of the... I'm sorry, it's not Rashi. That's not Rashi over here. Okay, but the faces of the wealthy, in other words, wealthy took good care of themselves, they look good. So in other words, and it elicited a sense of of real sadness. Like that's what we lost. But the poor people, though, however, did not look good. Did not physically, were not able to physically keep themselves up to that same degree. They didn't look as good, so therefore their faces were covered. I'm sorry, I'm looking for Rashi. It's right in the Gemara. Right, their faces were really it was not easy to look at because of the famine and they couldn't eat. And so obviously that created again a bad feeling amongst the poor people. So okay, so therefore the minute came about that everyone's face would be covered at the funeral. Okay, Birishona, this is now number four, example number four. Birishona, you motzin Hashirim b'dargash v'aniyim b'klicha. The wealthy were being taken out and marched over to the cemetery in a dargash. There's that word again. It was a fancy bed, whatever exactly it was. A fancy bed, and the aniyim would go out b'klicha, klicha, Rashi says, mitosh ha-mesim. A simple coffin. And once again, another institution that was made that the poor people are going to go up with klicha. Everybody's going to go up with klicha. Now, this is number six. Rishona ayu manichim es a mugmar tachas cholim me'ayim meisim vayicholim me'ayim chayim mitbaishin. So there was mugmar. There was incense that was burned underneath the remains of somebody who suffered from very serious intestinal problems. And basically they had problems controlling their bowel movements, and so therefore, so as not to, right, to basically cover a mace, in other words, to provide some sort of honor for the dead, so they would burn incense in or near his casket, not totally clear to me, but in other words, around his casket, and then the people at the funeral. So let's say you who were there at the funeral, who were suffering from very bad GI problems. So you're now looking, you're saying, you know, that's going to be me. Meaning I'm right. They're burning incense, and basically it's neon signs. It's basically telling everybody this person's suffering from GI problems. And so now you're there at the funeral, and you're saying, you know, in a short number of years from now, I'm going to be there, and they're going to be burning incense by me, and that's humiliating and made people feel terrible. So therefore, once again, they burn incense for everybody so that nobody would feel bad. Nobody at the funeral will feel bad. And another, this is now number seven. At the funerals of the women who were, right before they died, they were menstruating. So they would take all the utensils in the house and anything she came into contact with, and they would tovel them in the mikvah for understandable reasons, because she, before death, she was an Ida, which means that she was metame, everything she touched. And so they tovel everything in the mikvah. And again, I guess it was more on a public display. And again, the women who were at the time there at the funeral watching everything get tovel in the mikvah, so they felt terrible. And right, in other words, everyone's going to now speak about how right before I died I was in need, I was menstruating. It's very immodest. So basically, once again, they created a standard and a uniformity. So once again, what they did is that for any woman who died, so they toveled all their kalim, regardless of whether she was or was not in need before she died, nobody would no longer be embarrassed. A man who was a Zav right before he died. So again, everything he came into contact with, everything he sat on was Tameh, and now, so they had to tovel it, which again created a problem. So once again, you're a Zav, and you're at the funeral, and you're watching now how everything's getting taken out of the house and toveled to the mikvah, and you're saying to yourself, now when I die, they're going to do the same to me, and once again, I'm going to be on public display that I was a Zav before I died. So, and so once again, so they would total everything in the mikvah, just so that nobody would be embarrassed. Birishona, I lost count, number nine already? Birishona, haisa utsasa meis kashla krovav, yosda mimisasa. I know this is a great area to make social commentary. I'm going to avoid making the social commentary. I'll just read the Gemara, right? Hamev and Yavin, you'll get it. But basically, the costs of funerals were exorbitant, to the point where poor people couldn't afford a funeral, just a simple funeral back then. So what they would do is, after when somebody was died, so they would leave the mace in the street and leave for other people to take care of it. They just couldn't afford it. So Ashu Krova Minichin or so Uborchin, they would just simply run away. Ashuba Rabbi Gamliel Benal Kalas Rosh Bashmo, and Rabbi Gamliel said it's getting out of hand. So Rabbi Gamliel was the leader of the Jewish community. He was a Nasi, so he made the following institution. So, and the simple pshat in the Gemara is Batsmo. He did this for himself, meaning he did this for his own funeral. Meaning, as Tosus points out, he made it Sava. He commanded that this is what's going to be done. Tosus does offer another pshat where Tosus says that maybe this, he did this for a family member. But Tosus says, but the simple pshat in the Gemara, and probably the correct pshat in the Gemara, is that he did this for himself. And v'yatz b'kli pishtan. And so that when he's going to get buried, he's going to get buried in simple linen clothing. Not a fancy suit, not nothing exorbitant, simple linen clothing. And from that point going forward, everybody was buried b'kli pishtan, because Rami Gamliel instituted it to be done so. Amar Rav Papa Vahid, and Rav Papa says that nowadays, now Gama Afila B'tsarda Barzuza, people would get buried in even cheaper clothing. Right, tzarda bar zuza, some clothing that was only worth one zuz. Right, one zuz is not a lot of money. In other words, really they cap the amount of cost it was going to be to bury somebody, so that everybody would be financially comfortable to do a proper burial. Okay, ein menichin es amita berechov. Okay, in our Mishnah, what do we learn? That the bed cannot be in chol hamoed, you can't stop in the street. Right, the Mishnah says that when you bury in Chol HaMoed, so you go right to the grave site, and you don't stop along the way, because stopping along the way would elicit hespedim, eulogies, and in Chol HaMoed we don't do eulogies because it's Chol HaMoed, it's Man Simcha. However, Amar of Papa ein Moed b'fnei Tamar Chacham v'kol shekin Chanukah Purim. Now, what if the person who we're burying is a Tamar Chacham? Okay, we know it's Chol HaMoed, we understand that, but we're going to give a spade him anyway. Okay, he's a Tamar Chacham. And the same thing would be true in Chanukah and Purim as well. Chanukah and Purim, which is less than Chol HaMoed, right? There's no Issa Malacha in Chanukah and Purim, so it's less than Chol HaMoed, so for sure, for a Tamar Chacham, you are going to be able to do a hespate for a Tamar Chacham. Regular hespate him, no, on Chanukah and Purim. Regular hespate him, meaning hespate him for the rest of us, no, but for Tamar Chacham, we're going to, for that, there's going to be a hespate on Chanukah and Purim. Okay. On a lot of days where you're not allowed to give Hespedim, you're right, you're not allowed to give Hespedim on Rosh Chodesh and on Erev Shabbos, and there are a number of days where you don't give Hespedim. So you know what the minhag is. The Rav gets up there, and the Rav says, you're right, today I'm not going to say Hesped, but I'm just going to say the following words. Generally speaking, what's done nowadays, which again, that's the minhag, so therefore it's appropriate. But again, it's just a sensitivity to the fact that it's Chol HaMoed, it's Chanukah, it's Purim, meaning just basic sensitivity. So, Hani Mila, back to the Gemara. The Hani Mila b'fanav, avashlo b'fanav lo. The Gemara points out, on Chol HaMoed, you can give a hesped for Tamar Chacham, but only in his presence. Not in his presence. So, lo ini v'harav kahana saftel arav zvid, meaning arad b'fam nara. So the Gemara says, yeah, but Rav Kahana delivered a eulogy for Rav Zvid, and it was Chol HaMoed, let's assume, because the Gemara is asking a question, and it was Chol HaMoed. Amar Rav Papa Yom Shmua Hava Uke Befanav Dami. No, it was, you're right, it wasn't directly in front of him, but it was on Yom Shmua, it was on the day that he heard, and it was a very difficult day for him, and so therefore he felt it appropriate, even though it was Chol HaMoed, that he would deliver a eulogy on that day. Amar Ula. Okay, next couple lines of Gemara, just some definitions of terms. Right, we see throughout our Masechta, throughout this Perek of Moed Katan, the third Perek of Moed Katan, we see terms like Hesped and Softim and Kilos. Kilos is not a term we haven't seen much of. But in other words, what are the definitions of these terms? So the next couple lines of Gemara, just simple definitions. Hesped alei. Whenever you see the word hesped, it means that we're going to beat our chest. Okay, that was the practice back then. I know we think hesped, we think eulogies, a delivery of a eulogy, it's a speech. Right. The Gemara says, no, that's not the technical definition of a hesped. The technical definition is people beating their chest. The Gemara quotes a pasuk, Ashadayim sovdim. Okay, so the women are hitting their chest. Next, tipuach biyad. When you see the word tipuach, metapchen, so that means that the clapping of the hands. Not applause, in other words, but out of grief and out of sorrow. And kilos beregel, stomping of the feet. Gemara quotes a braisa. The braisa says that when you're mekales, don't do so while wearing the sandals, but only while wearing shoes, because it's dangerous. And with sandals, it'll be dangerous. Why is it going to be dangerous with sandals? So Rashi says over here, because with the sandals, they're right. I thought, who said nails? Somebody said nails. I thought it was going to be sandal mesumar. But I thought that's the direction we were going to go. That's not what Rashi says. Rashi says, hofech hasandal shover raglo. The sandals aren't really that well attached to your feet, and you're banging your feet on the ground while you're wearing the sandals, and you think, no problem at all, I got the sandal that's going to protect me, and the sandal's going to slip off, and you're going to hurt your foot. Rashi says more than that. Shover raglo. Okay, so that's Rashi's understanding of our Gemara. I'm Rav Yochanan. Avo kemishan inu rosh shuv eim menachmar shem leshev etzlo. Okay, there's got to be a method of communication between the mourner and the comforters. And basically, look, comforters have a mitzvah to provide comfort, right? The nicham avelim, providing comfort for the mourner, big mitzvah. The Rambam writes, I haven't spoken at this Rambam. The Rambam writes that if you have a choice between nicham avelim and bikur cholim, right? Oddly enough, Rambam says nicham avelim first. Meaning before visiting the sick. Rambam is very interesting. Rambam says, why? Why Nicham Avelim first? So Rambam says, because, I'm not going to say it. It's too inappropriate. But the you're delivering chesed to two people when you do Nicham Avelim. For the mace and for the mourner. Bikur Cholim, you're only getting one person. Okay, so the nicham avelim is a huge mitzvah. On the other hand, it's a human mitzvah, which means that there's somebody else involved, and that somebody else involved right now may not want menachman. So there is a communication that the Gemara here speaks out in terms of at which point the avel is going to be telling the menachman. Okay, I need a little time by myself. So that's Amar of Yochanan. Okay, with that said, let's go. Avo kemish shenane rosho shuvei menachmer shem leshev etzlov. So the Avel, so he nods his head, and that head nod, that's a sign for everybody. Okay, I'm tired. All right, everybody, please, time for you to go. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Interesting. The Aruch HaShulchan writes. I haven't seen this Aruch HaShulchan in a while. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that that nowadays we don't have this form of communication. Meaning the head nod that the Gemara over here speaks to, it's not a universal sign. Aruch HaShulchan says that when you do the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim, so you got to be sensitive, you got to be smart. He says you go in there, so no one, it's time to leave. Okay, and don't let it's true. Agree. Okay, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hakol Chayav Lama Bifnei Anasi Chutz Me'Avel V'Chola. Okay, Anasi comes in, the leader of the Jewish community comes in, you got to stand up. All right. The kavod, simple honor. However, if he's coming to visit an Avel, the Avel has no requirement to stand up. He's coming to visit a Chola, Chola also does not have a requirement to stand up. I mean, maybe the Chola can't stand up, but that's, I guess the point of the Gemara over here is that even if he could, but he's holy, but he's sick, so he does not have to stand up. Amar Rabbi Yochanan l'chol omrim lam shivu chutz me'ava v'chola. When do people sit down? When the Nasi says it's okay to sit down. I mean, Nasi comes in, you stand, and then you wait for him to give you permission to go sit down, and then we all sit down. When it comes to an avel and a chola, this is the way Tosfos understands the Gemara. If they decide to stand up, meaning the Gemara previously said that they shouldn't, but they don't have to. Right, that's a better way to say it. Yeah. They don't have to stand up. But if they decide to stand up, so then they don't have to wait for permission to sit down. They can sit down when they want to. They're mourning, they're sick. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Avah, Yom Rishon Asa L'Echol Lechem Mishalal. Okay, the Sudas Avra, which I know we spoke about already back in the Mishnah, but now the Gemara is going to give us a source. Where does that come from? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu said to Yechezkel, but you're not going to eat lechem anashim. Remember how it worked? Anything that Kadosh Baruch Hu told Yechezkel not to do, that's what everyone else should be doing when they're in Avol. Rabbi and Rav Yosef exchanged meals to one another. Meaning when one was an Avol, one would provide the meal, and the other was the Avol, the other would reciprocate and provide the meal. Right? It was a strange reminiscence, but it reminded me of the Gemara back in Megillah, where for Mishloach Manos, so also there was an exchange between Amoraim in terms of meals. I was curious. I thought, oh, it's the same Amoraim. I looked up the Gemara. It's not the same. It's not the same Amoraim, but exact same language in the Gemara in Megillah. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Meis Beir, Kol Bnei Eir, Asurim Basias Malacha. Someone dies in a town, so everyone for the funeral has got to stop and go to the funeral. And Rav Hamnuna equal Ladar Musa. Rav Hamnuna went to a town. I'm not going to pronounce it again. I already did a poor job once. Shama Kol Shifura De Shechva. So the shofar was blown. Somebody died, and they're about to do a burial. Chaza Hanachisha De Kavdi Avidata. And meanwhile, I was looking around the town, small town, and people are doing work in the town. So Rav Hamnuna couldn't believe it. I understand. Somebody's dead. There's a burial. Wait, stop work. Everyone should go to the funeral. So and he was so upset that he put them in chayim. So lo shachve ika b'masa. There's a dead person in town. What is everyone doing? Amrule chavurasa ika b'masa. There's a chavra. Okay, we still use the term to this day. Meaning there's a chavra kadisha. They have their own chavra kadisha. And okay, so in other words, funeral's taken care of. So he says, okay, all's forgiven. I take back my shamta, I take back my excommunication. Okay, you're right. Point well taken. Arm Rav Yehuda Amarav, Kol Amiskash Al Mesa Yosemi Dai Al Mes Acher Hu Boche. Gemara, difficult Gemara, but important Gemara, don't cry too much over the mace. Right, Rav Yochanan says, sorry, I don't know why I said Rav Yochanan, Rav Yehuda Amarav says that if you cry too much over the mace, so then that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you another mace to cry over. The Gemara tells a story with Rav Huna. There was a woman living in the community of Rav Huna. She had seven sons, mace chad minai. One of the seven sons died. She cried excessively. And in a moment, we're going to give the definition of what that means excessively. She cried excessively. Shachla Rav Huna lo tavdi hachi. Rav Huna went over and sent her a message and said, warned her, enough. Right? That's too much. So lo ashkach bay. She didn't listen to Rav Huna. Shach la itzaisas muta v'ilo tzavises avdasa li'idach. And Rav Huna then sent a second warning. You must listen to me, and if you don't listen to me, prepare the shrouds for the next dead. In other words, you're going to have another one of your sons died. Mace umesukulu. And she didn't listen to Rav Huna. All seven sons died. L'sof amala timush davdasala nafshech umesa. And then Rav Huna said, and apparently she's still just excessive crying. Rav Huna says, prepare the shrouds for yourself. And as Rav Huna instructed, she died as well. The Gemara explained the pasuk in Yirmiyahu when it says "Don't cry for the dead." It means don't cry too much for the dead. And al tanodu lo yoser mikashir. And when it says al tanodu, don't shake. Right, shake when they at the funerals. So they would shake. Right, people. It's just a physical demonstration of the sadness and sorrow that they're in. But again, that what the pasuk in Yirmiyahu means is not too much. Haketzad. So what is appropriate? Shloshi yamim lebechi, the first 3 days, that's appropriate for crying. Shivala hesped, 7 days for eulogy. Now again, the word hesped over here, we can go back to what we learned earlier. Hesped over here doesn't mean eulogy per se, it means the beating on the chest. It's again, a physical manifestation of sadness and sorrow. Shloshim legivs l'tasparos. And the 30 days post-mortem, so that's appropriate for not ironing your clothing and not getting a haircut. Mikan ve'elach amar kash baruch hu, yetam rachamim bo yoser mimeni. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, don't be more compassionate than me. Meaning, I'm saying that's enough. And if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying it's enough, so then we have to follow his lead, capital H. it's enough. Bacho bacho laholech, cry for that which is lost. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. We just quoted the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, so the Gemara is now going to just continue explaining the end of the pasuk. A real tragedy is somebody who dies and didn't leave any children. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Avela El Amanda Azobala Bani. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would only go to the Beis Avel only if the tragedy involved somebody dying without children. Okay, that was his policy. It's a strange policy. Meaning, there's a mitzvah. Okay, I'm not here to explain it in totality, but that was, in other words, the point the Gemara is making is it's an intense tragedy. The Gemara continues quoting this pasuk in Yirmiyahu from Perichav Beis, and the Gemara is now going to explain what does that second half of the pasuk mean. Rav Huna Amar Zeshavar Avera Veshanaba, someone who doesn't Aver repeats the Avera. Rav Huna Latame Damar Rav Huna Kemishavar Adam Avera Veshanaba, Hutrolo. You do an Avera and you repeat it, so now it becomes Mutter. To which the Gemara says, what? Becomes mutter. It's like it's mutter. We have in the Sheotos Tefosav. Right, somebody dies in your mourning. So for the first 3 days, like the sword is between your shoulder blades, meaning you're at risk as well. Right, the Tosus over here quotes the Gemara Yerushalmi. Yes. And also, of course, the Gemara Bavli, look at the last Tosfos, last line of Tosfos, the Echem and Achem Shemes, Yidagu Kula Achem. Meaning, one of the brothers die, all the other brothers should be worried. Meaning, the Malchum office is basically in town. So, Mishosha Shiva Kilu Menechaslo Keneged Bekeren Zavis. From day 3 to day 7, sword is not as close, but it's still in the house, it's in the corner of the room. Mikan Be'elach Kilu Averes Keneged Beshuk. And from that point going forward, okay, it's not in the house anymore, but it's wandering in the marketplace and you're not totally out of danger's way. Stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up from the very last line.